Domingo Santana, ooh, I wanna add you to my roster. In Roto, replacing Gio Soto, Giolito, and Brito, baby, where'd my fab go? Near the Florida Keys, there's a place in Miami, that's where you wanna be to get ahead of your league. If you put Posey at sea, he'll help in points or OBP. Heath will approve, cause he's under 30, cause Heath's an ageist on the podcast. Mazzara and Parra project to Amiwara, Herrera, Cabrera. Don't let the bait that scare ya, Machado or Bono or no.
Friday, August 12th, we're talking about Noah Syndergaard and Carlos Martinez, two-star pitchers for Fantasy Week 19. And yeah, you know, the big fantasy baseball news. I've been told on Twitter by several people to call the show the finale because
I
was leaving. So,
I like it.
Yeah, it's the finale.
What's that have to do with A-Rod?
Yeah, Alex Rodriguez and Alex Melchior, I know that's not your name, but it is right now, are bidding us adieu
for the day.
and I'm really happy to be part of Al's last show here on Fantasy Baseball Today. But you know, Scott, remember when you were in high school? You remember senioritis?
I do remember. See, I mean, I'm not going to say I had senioritis. maybe a little, right?
You're
maybe
a senior,
a little.
You got into college.
You're not really.
Nothing's at stake. Well, Al Melchior shows up 20 minutes late today. This is the first time all year, I think, Al Melchior showed up late. What's up with that, Al? Senioritis.
I'm probably guilty of senioritis, but not for that reason. I actually was planning on coming in early today, but, you know, when you're moving, unexpected things can happen. So. I was late. I'm sorry, Adam.
All right, well, we are going to talk fantasy baseball today. We also have a lot of emails dedicated to Al and a poem written by a mystery guest that I will read a little bit later. Get excited. Here's our Al mail of the day, number one, from Paul Vanderheiden. Dear 2009, 2011, 2012, and 2014, those are the years I won my big boy league with lots of help from Al. You have helped me on a weekly basis for several years. Can you help me one last time? Assuming AJ Pollock finishes 2016 successfully without any injuries or hiccups, where would you rank Pollock to start 2017?
And I assume he means among outfielders. That's going to be a tough enough task to do top of mind as opposed to overall. I'd say among outfielders, I think I had him either fourth or fifth.
Oh, yeah, really?
Yeah, coming into this
really
year.
Not.
And you know, outfield has not gotten any better, really, since the beginning of the year. So I'll discount him somewhat, but I think he'll certainly be in my top eight.
Scott?
Yeah.
I feel like he and Charlie Blackman are going to rank very close to, because Charlie Blackman's basically had a Pollock season this year.
Well, you know, it's kind of weird. I looked it up this morning. Because Blackman had a nice game yesterday, and he is having a good year, but he's not stealing bases quite like we expected. Charlie Blackman has just 14 steals in 19 attempts, but would you want to guess since May 1st when he came off the DL where Charlie Blackman ranks, even with these, you know, lack of steals among outfielders?
It's very high.
I'm going to guess third.
Yeah, he's third in points and fourth in Roto or vice versa.
Top great
four.
Guess.
Way to go, Al! You got to stick around now. You're too good at this.
Yeah. So probably
my last day, I finally get good at these guessing games.
Yeah, probably top 10 for me too.
Top 10, yeah. I mean, it's such an interesting thing in fantasy in every sport. It's almost like you have to downgrade guys who got injured, but
right.
Well, you don't have to, but you do it just because there's, I guess, a little bit of uncertainty. But why couldn't you just rank them where you had them going into 2016, you know?
Well, Al makes a good point about outfield not being deeper. It's other than catcher, it's probably the shallowest hitter position right now. But all of hitting as a whole has improved so much too that I feel like even if you're counting on AJ Pollock to have a carbon copy of his 2014 season, I mean, there's a way we can check to see where he'd rank in, well, I guess at the end of the year.
Yeah.
We can see where that version of Pollock would have ranked this year among all hitters. But I imagine it would be low.
I would guess top five, wouldn't you?
I would guess not, just because hitting is so much better in general, but I could be wrong.
Okay.
Going top of mind here.
Yeah. I don't know. I'm just thinking if Charlie Blackman's a top four outfielder, I feel like Pollock was better than Blackman. Am I wrong?
Yeah, but that you're talking about outfielders.
Yeah,
I'm talking about all hitters.
I know. You're right. Okay. You're right. At least that, you know, outfield's very, very weak this year compared to the other positions. I just remember, I think it was 2013, Jose Bautista had kind of a down year. He played 118 games and he only slugged .498. He hit 28 home runs in 118 games and you had an okay year. And I feel like he fell to the third round. This is all kind of off the top of my head, but this was always my favorite bounce back player. Getting Bautista in the third round the following year when he hit .286 with 35 home runs and 103 RBIs, just because a guy gets injured doesn't necessarily mean he should be downgraded. So Pollock will be an interesting player next year.
Yeah.
I hope he goes in the third round. I'd be all over that. Al Mail of the Day number two is from Ryan in St. Louis. Before Al leaves, I need him to answer these questions, please. What is Al's favorite band?
My music listening habits are I tend to get very intensely into one band and then kind of listen to them exclusively.
Just say Genesis
for months at a time. So it's Genesis. If you asked me this like 6 months ago, you know, might have been REM, might have been James, but now it's definitely Genesis.
Okay, Al's favorite baseball player of all time.
Yeah, that's tough. It's probably going to be somebody from the 1970s Phillies because that's the team I grew up with. So I'm certainly a big fan of Mike Schmidt. I really like Gary Maddux a lot.
I don't know who that is.
I'll go Mike Schmidt.
Okay, I know Mike Schmidt. Stick with Mike Schmidt. What does Al's favorite curse word start with?
I have to pick one. Well, since I wanted to use the S word here, I'll go with that.
Okay, the S word it is. Stupid is Al's favorite curse word. And what is Al's favorite TV show of all time?
Man, these are all tough. Again, probably going to have to go back to the 70s for that one.
Really?
Yeah.
I thought I knew the answer to this.
Yeah, Seinfeld, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, you know what? Because if I have to sit down right now and choose between Seinfeld and what would be my other choice, Mary Tyler Moore Show, I think I would rather watch Seinfeld.
Yeah, well, okay. That makes sense. Seinfeld and Mary Tyler Moore, good answers. Ryan says, we are going to miss Al so much. I told my fiance, I don't know if I can make it the next 6 weeks of this season without Al Melchior.
I don't know if I can either.
I feel, for what it's worth, feel kind of bad. Yeah.
So I've got more bad news for fantasy baseball listeners. And this is not something, nobody's leaving the show.
Oh, good.
This is not something I take lightly. And I say it with, you know, an apologetic tone here. The Fantasy Baseball Today podcast is going to change time slots with Fantasy Football Today starting next week, with the exception of Mondays. We're going to still do Monday shows, at least for the time being, early on Monday, so we can help you pick up players and set your lineups if you're in the weekly leagues. Now, last year when we did this, I think we did the baseball shows starting in the afternoon and posting kind of late. This year, we're going to do them a little bit earlier. So we're going to record probably around 11 a.m., 11:30 a.m. Eastern, and they should be out to you by about 1 p.m., 1:30 p.m. Eastern time going forward. But there's just such a demand for fantasy football right now. I'm not going to lie to you about the motivation. It's just, it's football season. It's draft season. We have a ton of listeners for both shows, thank goodness. But, look, football's king right now. I don't want to, you know, tap dance, tiptoe around it. So I'm just going to be honest with you. Fantasy Baseball Today going to move. We're still going to try to get it out by 1 p.m., 1:30 p.m. Eastern every day for you. So that should be helpful. At least you'll have it at least for your drive home, maybe on your lunch break, maybe if you're on the West Coast, early commute. And I do apologize, but that is happening. It's Al's fault. So here's Thursday standouts, guys. Who stood out to you on Thursday?
Well, my last standout, huh? And I'm stalling for time because, you know what? I'm gonna go negative on my last day.
Oh
here.
Boy!
Oh, wow!
Why are you doing this to us?
Noah Syndergaard, because I think it's. I know we've talked some about the steals against him, but for crying out loud, Braden Shipley stole a base.
Yeah,
off of the Syndergaard yesterday. And I just think this is something that we have to pay attention to every week. And in week 20 coming up. It's a two-start week for Syndergaard. His first start to get the Diamondbacks, and they are fourth in the majors in stolen bases. Chip Hale, since being the manager of that team, has allowed his base runners to take a very aggressive approach. So it might be a nice week to pick up, you know, Chris Owings or get Gene Segura off your bench. You know, that kind of thing I think is worth paying attention to. So it's not really so much about Syndergaard himself. I mean, I'm not going to bench him because of this, but I'm going to pay attention to who the opponent is.
Well, I had a segment in here, and I wonder, I probably used this reference before on the podcast. I've been doing this for like 7 years, but did you guys ever watch Mad TV?
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember the segment, Lowered Expectations?
Now I do.
I don't.
It was a dating segment with just very undateable, homely people, and basically having to lower their expectations to find a match. And I want to know, I don't feel that way about Syndergaard and Carlos Martinez quite that much, but I want to know if you are lowering your expectations for Syndergaard and Carlos Martinez. Martinez is walking everybody, and Syndergaard, looking at his last 8 starts before yesterday, 4.06 ERA, and it only went up after yesterday, 53 hits and 44 and a third, 15 walks, 51 strikeouts. Opponents have a 4.08 BABIP, so I do wonder if there's some bad luck there, but they're hitting 3.03. I mean, are we even getting to the point where Syndergaard and Carlos Martinez might not be must starts? Tell me if you're lowering your expectations for those two guys.
I mean, for Martinez, not so much. I mean, but they were obviously a different place to start with. For Syndergaard, I feel like it's impossible not to, just the way the last few weeks have gone. But at the same time, I'm not sure it's deserved. I mean, he has, over his last 6 starts, you know, he has a 3.78 ERA, which isn't terrible. 3.78, still well more than a strikeout per inning, and yet he's 0-4. So obviously that's having an impact on his production. I mean, he deserves to be better than 0-4 during that stretch. You mentioned the BABIP is just astronomically high right now. I thinking maybe there probably is some relation to the elbow and him getting hit harder now, but at the same time, there's not clear evidence of it. There is clear evidence of some bad luck going on here. So I would not consider benching him, but at the same time, I'm not counting on him at the same level I was before.
Mm-hmm. But not Carlos Martinez, because I wonder if the innings are catching up to Carlos Martinez. For the 15th time, I'll mention this. Both Martinez and Syndergaard were on Tom Verducci's I'm worried about them because of workload list to start the season, along with Lance McCullers, along with Luis Severino, and I don't remember who else, Tyler Duffy, I think. Maybe that was last year for Duffy. But anyway, not lowering your expectations for Martinez, because I am. When I start Carlos Martinez in the one league I own him in, I no longer expect dominant starts. I'm just hoping for a quality start.
Well, I see you list the ERA 4.50 last 7 starts, but I look at the actual game log during that stretch. I see 2 not so great starts.
Well, what's a 4.50 ERA? It's 6 innings, 3 earned runs, right?
Yeah.
That's kind of what I'm hoping for, but it's actually the whip that's concerning me because he's walking so many batters.
Yeah. That's fair. I mean, he hasn't been particularly efficient. I just feel like, I don't know. I feel like we're kind of, a little too focused on.
Scott, see, I'm surprised to hear this because you typically have been a guy when you see a pitcher consistently walking 3 or 4 batters, and he does have some control issues. I mean, he had a 1.29 whip last year, Carlos Martinez. I felt like you guys would be, and I don't know where Al is, you can weigh in too. I thought you guys would be a little concerned. I'm not sitting Carlos Martinez. I can't afford to sit him, but I have lowered my expectations. I'm surprised that we're just kind of, you know, pushing it under the, sweeping it under the rug here that he's walking everybody, walking guys.
Well, I think it's because it's not actionable, which is you just sort of conceded that.
Yeah.
I don't really disagree with anything you're saying, Adam. Yeah, my expectations are lowered, but it's not really, I think it, you know, maybe it has changed in terms of not considering Martinez absolutely must start, but I still consider him close to that.
I guess the issue for me is like, I'm looking at the game log and I want most of these starts in my lineup during this supposed rough stretch. These are starts I want credit for. So yeah. I can't get too frustrated.
Okay, fair. Scott, why don't you try to pick up the tone of the show here, pick up the mood a little bit, and give us a positive standout from Thursday.
Well, I mean, it was a positive happening Thursday, but I don't know that the overall take is going to be so positive. Kenny Vargas homered twice, once from each side of the plate, and it seems like every time this guy's in the lineup, he does big damage, but they're not putting him in the lineup that consistently. This was his first start since Sunday. And I don't see how that's going to change, because now with Trevor Plouffe off the DL, obviously they want him at third base, so that forces Miguel Sano to DH. Joe Mauer, of course, is fixed at first base, so where does Vargas play? I don't think he plays anywhere regularly, but I'd like to see him, because since returning from the minors, he's slugging like .650, walking a ton, striking out a ton too, which, okay, maybe... with increased exposure, there would be some regression to come. But I want to at least see it happen. You know, I think he's shown enough he deserves to fail. He deserves the chance to fail. And if he got that chance, I probably would be picking him up in some roto leagues, hoping for some cheap power there. At the very least, I think he needs to be playing every day against lefties, because he's 9-for-17 with 3 home runs against them.
Okay, Kenny Vargas. Let's keep an eye on him. We just need to see him play a little bit more. I will actually give 2 standouts and not a negative spin on them. I'll let you guys do that. Eduardo Rodriguez, 46% owned. Since being recalled right after the All-Star break, he's 1-2 with a 2.80 ERA. He did have a couple of bad starts in there, but 3 very good starts, 1 start that was 5 1/3, 2 earned runs with 8 strikeouts, so close to a quality start. I think you got to be encouraged by that. So I would say 4 out of 6 encouraging, 2 pretty bad ones for Eduardo Rodriguez, and 2 starts next week. And Braden Shipley, 7 shutout innings at the Mets with 7 strikeouts. He was terrible in his first start against Milwaukee. Since then, he's been good, except for another start against Milwaukee in which he walked 6. He only gave up 2 runs. Shipley is 17% owned. Eduardo Rodriguez is 46% owned. Do either of these guys feel under-owned to you?
I would say Rodriguez maybe a little bit. I have nothing negative to say about Rodriguez. I think it's been very impressive what he's done since returning to the rotation. Much more consistency in general, more consistent control, which is something you figure at minimum you should be able to get from Rodriguez. And I think you mentioned the swinging strikes, and that's been a nice...
I didn't.
Bonus. You did not?
No.
Oh, well, yeah, he's getting them. game log from the last 5 starts, the count, whiff count, 13, 12, 9, 12, and 14. That's nice, and that's consistent. So
here's the problem, Al.
Yeah.
Eduardo Rodriguez has Baltimore and Detroit on the road next week. Are you going to trust him? You might need to make the playoffs next week. You're going to trust Eduardo Rodriguez?
Not a must add or must start, but probably would.
How about Shipley? Has the Mets again at home and at San Diego. Now he's 19% owned. He was 17% owned yesterday. Shipley against the Mets and at San Diego. Scott, any interest in Braden Shipley?
I mean, those are much better matchups. Yeah, and his last 3 starts have been pretty good. I mean, there was 6 walks the time before this one, which wasn't a good individual stat, but it's not like control's normally an issue for him. So I don't know. I mean, he's not normally a strikeout guy either, and he got 7 strikeouts in this start. It's gone a lot better than I expected for Shipley. It's kind of continued the trend of the call-ups who I expect to do well don't, and the ones who I don't expect to do well thrive. It's such a small sample that I'm not fully buying into it yet. I guess if I needed an extra start, those matchups are good enough that I might roll the dice.
Yeah, I don't trust Shipley. I think that this is a case. Yeah, it's gone a lot better than I would have expected. I don't trust it. There was that 6 walk start where he threw just barely more than half of his pitches for strikes. So that was ugly, even though it was, you know, a quality start. And I thought, you know, maybe he's getting a lot of ground balls because he doesn't have a lot of spin on his four seamer, but actually a lot of fly balls for the most part from Shipley. So I'm just not seeing anything here that really bodes well for future success on top of the minor league numbers, which are just merely okay.
We must have had a lot of aces with two-star pitching weeks this week, because next week is just dreadful. I mean, some of the most owned players who have two starts, and you've got great players at the top. You got Kluber, Lester, Scherzer, Syndergaard. You got Duffy, who we'll talk about. But then you've got Maeda. You're going to start him at Philadelphia, at Cincinnati.
Sure.
You've got Gio Gonzalez at Colorado and at Atlanta. I think that's a sit. You've got Drew Pomeranz at Cleveland and at Detroit. Start or sit him?
I'd probably start him, honestly.
Yeah, I would too.
Probably, but it's not a certainty. Matt Moore, two home starts for Matt Moore in San Francisco against Pittsburgh and against the Mets. I'd start him,
yeah,
right?
I would definitely start him.
But Vince Velasquez is iffy. Samardzija, two home starts against Pittsburgh and New York. And then look at the guys who are available in less than 70% of leagues. There's Drew Smyly, Bartolo Colon, Robbie Ray, Brandon Finnegan, Eduardo Rodriguez with those tough matchups, Martin Perez, Gallardo, Daniel Norris, Ryan Vogelsong. Braden Shipley is one of my favorites of the less than 70% owned group. Bad week.
Well, pitchers who are less than 70% owned are, I mean, this is the caliber of names you usually see there, right?
Well, I mean, in the past, it could have been a Paxton.
Yeah, well, that was weird that he was.
Could have been a Skaggs.
Actually, I think Robbie Ray, who's 46% owned, he has those Mets-Padres matchups that Shipley does.
Yeah.
I really like the way he's trending right now, coming off one of his best starts of the season. And yeah, the strikeouts were low in that start, but that was after a stretch of very high strikeouts consistently.
But the walks are
way down for him. The walks.
How can you like the way he's trending? He gave up 10 runs in his previous two starts, and before that it was 5 innings, 3 runs.
Well, I'm telling you, Adam, you interrupted me, sir.
But I just
the walks
I can't
are
even,
way down.
The walks and the strikeouts have been good for a while now for Robbie Ray. The runs aren't. I can't trust that next week.
Well, if the runs weren't down, he would be owned in a lot more than 46% of leagues. I'm saying that there are some positive underlying trends here that make me think he's about to break through.
Been going on for a long time.
Shields. I think he's underperformed to such a degree that at some point he's gonna live up to the peripherals.
I hope so. I would have a tough time. I wouldn't mind owning him. I would have a tough time trusting Robbie Ray in Fantasy Week 19, and if not everybody has a lot on the line next week.
Right.
I would have a tough time trusting him.
You're not going to trust any pitcher less than 70% of leagues that you're picking up to make two starts, though. You're gambling in the hope of a big payoff, always.
But sometimes, Scott, we say, oh, this guy, he's got great matchups. You got to start him next week. I don't really feel like there's someone who jumps off the page at you this week. Honestly, I think Smyly would be my favorite. San Diego and Texas at home.
I like Smyly, and only slightly more owned than him is Irvin Santana with the Braves and Royals. Matchups don't get much better than that.
Yeah. I wasn't looking at him. 73% owned.
Well, maybe I'm just remembering wrong, because I feel like a lot of times we're just talking about a difference in tone here. I mean, I don't know that I feel any differently about Robbie Ray than I might have about, some other nondescript pitcher. James Paxton, I feel like, is such an aberration that I don't want to cite him as the example. But, Tyler Duffy, any of those times he had good matchups and we recommended him, I know it didn't go well. But, a lot of times it's just maybe your impression is shaped by the tone in which we talk about him as opposed to how we actually feel about him.
All right.
Does
make
sense at all? No, that was confusing.
Like 2 weeks ago, Dylan Bundy had two starts, and sometimes I'm just looking at the most owned players here. Zach Davies. Remember Zach Davies had two great starts last week, he's only made one of them, Atlanta, and he gets Cincinnati this weekend. It just feel like there's usually a few guys, you look at the list and you say, that's the guy I want. This week, other than Irvin Santana, a little dicey for me.
I
agree. Scott, no more than usual. And actually, the number of guys that I'd be kind of willing to take a chance with seems much higher this week.
Really? What?
And, Yeah.
What planet am I living on today?
Because usually, I mean, if there's three guys in any given week that I feel halfway comfortable with that are 60% owned or lower, like, that's a pretty normal week.
That there aren't, though. Name
well,
three.
Well, and granted, I mean, I am including a couple that are a little more than that in Santana and Smiley, because, but yeah. I do like Ray. I think I would take a chance with Rodriguez. The matchups aren't great, but the Orioles have not hit for quite a while now, so mm-hmm. it's not necessarily a bad matchup. And Rodriguez has just performed well. He just might be up to the matchups.
Okay.
And I'm a little intrigued by Ryan Vogelsong. I don't think the Giants and Marlins they're not great matchups, but they're not really bad ones. And he's had two really good matchups his last two starts, and he's totally aced them. So yeah. It's not that I expect Vogelsong to be a completely different pitcher at this stage of his career, but he may be good enough. You know, there certainly, you know, was a time when he was pretty reliable as a two-start guy. I might be willing to give him a shot.
This misses your threshold by just a little, Adam, but Irvin Santana is 73% owned at Atlanta, at Kansas City. I feel like those are two really good matchups for a pitcher.
Yeah, we just said that. He's the best of the best.
Oh, you said
option.
That already?
Like six times.
Man, I am ruining Al's last podcast, I feel like.
I've got to throw in one more, too. This is probably the riskiest of the bunch, but I mean, I really like Daniel Norris, and yeah, he's got the Red Sox. He just might get clobbered there, but he starts off the week with the Royals, and it might be a situation where he gets enough mileage out of one start to be okay into two start week. Again, he's probably my least preferred of the names that we've mentioned, but I don't know. I just think there's more reasonable choices here than in a typical week.
Can you believe the Royals and the Mets this year? Wow, what a letdown. Crazy.
I think the Mets at least have a chance to finish strong like they did last year offensively. The Royals are just a mess right now.
They definitely need Cespedes. The guy is very, very important to their lineup.
Yeah,
which is something you have to consider. He might be back next week. So when you're looking at a two-star guy like Shipley or Ray, they might have to face Cespedes. Like, do you know when he's eligible to come off?
I don't.
Yeah,
I would think it's sometime next week. I don't recall.
It definitely is sometime next week. I don't know the exact date. Well, guess what? We just covered our two-star pitcher, so that's good. Now, in just a few weeks, fellas, I will be getting my Indochino suit delivered to my door. The best suit I've ever purchased. I cannot wait. I went into the showroom last week or 2 weeks ago. I saw what Indochino is all about. High-quality suits that will last a long time. And with the deal and the offer code that we've got for you, I know you'll do what I did. I know you'll go to Indochino.com. And buy a made-to-measure suit for just $399. A great deal from Indochino. Up to 50% off. Indochino is making made-to-measure suits affordable. You are going to look good. You are going to feel good. You get a sense of confidence. You get some swagger. It's uniquely yours. That's what I love about it. You get a suit that's just yours. And now you can customize the details like the lapels, the lining, the monogram. Indochino gives you a better quality and a better look than what you're going to get at a department store. Today, our listeners get any premium suit for just $3.99, up to 50% off at Indochino.com when they enter FBT at checkout. That's FBT, like Fantasy Baseball Today. And shipping is free, so there's no reason not to try your first custom-made suit with a deal this good, and a suit classic from their premium collection will look good, feel good, and last. That's Indochino.com, promo code FBT for any premium suit for just $3.99 and free shipping. Indochino, your look, your way. Big news. Wade Davis. What? Wade Davis making progress. Could throw off a mound soon. I'm a big Kelvin Herrera owner. I don't like this. Boo.
You're a big Kelvin Herrera owner.
Well,
big
I'm not that big. I'm kind of a small guy, but
yeah.
I have exposure. So we'll see. Hopefully, take your time, Wade Davis.
Yeah, I agree.
Robin Ventura sticking with David Robertson as his closer. But would you drop Robertson right now for Adam Ottavino, who's 25% owned?
I don't think so. It's not far off, though.
I wouldn't. Not yet.
Okay. Ottavino at 25% owned. Definitely a good closer. And we can finally say on a team that might actually get him a decent amount of save chances.
Yeah, I'm still skeptical of that. But
they've cooled off, no doubt. Carlos Santana was hit in the head with a foul ball. He left with a contusion. He will be monitored for concussion symptoms. Carlos Gonzalez pinch hit. All right, Cardinals. Matt Adams on the DL with shoulder inflammation. Randall Grichuk was recalled. Matt Holliday. Oh, I'm going to project the most drop list, looking at players who I think should be on the most drop list, looking into the future. And Matt Holliday was one of the headliners. Six straight weeks with 13 fantasy points or fewer. Now it's an easy call. Broken thumb, might miss the rest of the season, so you can drop Matt Holliday. But what happens now in the Cardinals lineup? Who's getting some opportunities here and will be able to take advantage with Adams and Holliday out?
Scott's shaking his head. That's kind of sums up trying to forecast the Cardinals lineup. Even when the crowd thins out a little bit, it's...
Well, Randall Grichuk is back, yeah. But I would think Tommy Pham has priority over him, right?
I would think so, too. Didn't start last night, but I would think long-term.
This is great news for Brandon Moss, because yes. I imagine he'll be playing every day. And he hasn't... I don't think he's been terrible against lefties. I mean, not great, but not somebody who, like, you really have to pay close attention to the matchups to.
Could be wrong. I'll give you the numbers I'll double-check. If you'd like. Moss is hitting 215, 287, 342 against lefties.
Yeah, I mean, probably if you're facing three or four lefties, you might think about sitting him still.
Yeah. He's driven in a run in six straight games, though, so that's cool. And he homered yesterday. So, yeah, yep. Moss the big beneficiary here, 45% own.
If there's one, yeah.
Okay. Let's see, David Ortiz returned to the lineup. Mookie Betts sat with a calf issue, and Hanley Ramirez left the game after a collision at first base. You know, guys, been watching some Red Sox games lately. Be interested to know what the Boston people think. I don't really think John Farrell's a very good manager.
Wow.
So why do you say that?
I think his bullpen management is pretty bad. And I don't know. You know, when he unfortunately had to step aside last year, they went on a crazy tear with Terry Lovello. And I wonder how the Boston people think. I just don't think John Farrell's such a great manager. I think they're underachieving this year.
I feel like most fans don't like the manager for their team. So I would guess you get a lot of support from Boston fans. But I look at the decisions made by the people closest to him. And this is a guy who... the Red Sox, like, gave up some, knowing Farrell better than anybody, because he was their pitching coach. You know, they gave up something to take him away from the Blue Jays. I mean, I feel like that speaks volumes, right? That speaks more than anything we can witness from our bleacher seats.
Oh, definitely, yeah. They obviously like him quite a bit. There have been some articles this year about him being on the hot seat.
I've read some things with fans griping. But yeah, personally, it hasn't really occurred to me that he's a bad manager.
All right. Couple of records to keep an eye on. David Dahl tied a record with a 17 game hitting streak to start his career. And
yeah.
Isn't that cool? Yeah.
He tied it with somebody I've never heard of.
Yeah, I know.
Had a very lackluster career.
Hey, just like when Brandon Crawford had seven hits, he tied it with somebody I'd never heard of.
Yeah.
It's the new Whit Merrifield.
So it doesn't really mean anything, probably, except you have no reason to sit Dahl, considering we were high on him in the first place.
And Milwaukee, you have no reason to sit Milwaukee. They became the eighth team since 1961 to score a run in every inning that they hit in a nine-inning game. Pretty cool.
Wow.
And this has to be a record. Aroldis Chapman, actually, this probably is not a record. Imagine there's a double play or something in there in the annals of baseball. Aroldis Chapman threw a three-pitch inning. You wonder, maybe somebody came in with nobody out, one on, maybe threw a two-pitch inning. Got three outs with a double play, and you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. They would have to come in. Yeah, they would have to have inherited base runners for that to work.
Right.
It would still technically be an inning if they got all three of the outs. So, yeah, probably right.
One-pitch triple play. Yeah.
That could happen. Jorge Soler and Javier Baez both sat yesterday. Chris Coughlin started for the Cubbies. Waiver wire MVPs. How about Danny Duffy and his complete game, seven hitter, one run, no walk, six strikeouts against the White Sox? And how about Mike Napoli, who is the number nine first baseman in points leagues now, number six in Roto, 4-for-4 with a home run and two doubles against the Angels? Anything to say about Danny Duffy and Mike Napoli? They have really helped fantasy owners.
I think Duffy's the clear must start. I mean, I can't imagine too many scenarios where I'd sit Napoli right now. But just knowing Napoli, and I mean, there's been times this year where he goes into like a 2-3 week funk where he's not doing anything for you, and he does become pretty easy to sit at, you know, it's a guy who's eligible on the infield where there are so many options.
Yeah, no, I totally agree with that assessment. Danny Duffy does not come out of my rotation anymore. Napoli, I have been starting probably the last, I don't know, 3-4 weeks in a row, but it's a weekly decision I have to look at. With Duffy, it's not.
Now, Scott, you talked about how the call-ups that you thought were going to be good haven't been good, and the call-ups that you thought were going to struggle have been good. And I just think it's so interesting when you're trying to project prospects. Look at two guys who pitched yesterday. Jameson Taillon, who's been great in his last six starts, 189 ERA and a ton of ground balls. And then Jose Berríos. And I'm just wondering if we're getting to the point with Jose Berríos, are we worried about his future? Are we going to start losing?
Come on.
Well, who's this bad? He's been just terrible. His ERA's
over
9.
Who's that bad at the start of their career? Roy Halladay.
I
was going to ask you guys.
That's the go-to example.
Okay.
But, you know, I think Tom Glavine was pretty bad at the beginning of his career. I'm sure that it's not a short list of great pitchers who had awful starts to their career. And, it's disappointing because by the numbers, it looks like Berríos has accomplished everything he can in the minors and has nothing more to work on there, sort of like Byron Buxton. But it's way too early to give up on him for the long haul. There's still a lot of strikeout potential on a pitcher who's supposed to have good control, kind of like Luis Severino, actually. This has become the Twins version of Severino, and I haven't lost faith in him long term either. So it's going to take a lot more for me to sour on a prospect this high end.
Yeah, the timing's a bit of a shame because Berríos' next start is the Braves. And, I was thinking with a good start here that maybe I'd, write him about him on waiver wire. But I can't recommend him now. I can't myself start Berríos, but you could certainly keep him stashed and see how he does against, a good matchup with a good matchup. And, maybe it's the start of something better.
On the other hand, Taillon, who we were also pretty excited about, I think is basically emerged as a must-start option. I would like to see the strikeouts be a little higher, but the control is so good. I mean, I think a combined 3 walks over his last 6 starts. He's looking like kind of like the way Aaron Nola started his career last year, which sounded like more of a compliment a couple months ago, I know. But still, I think he's a good pitcher.
Well, that's the thing. I think he has shown... From the limited samples I've seen of a lot of these guys who have been called up, I feel like he's one of the more developed, refined pitchers. Yesterday
Gosh,
he was talking about... What'd you say?
He had long enough to develop.
Well, yeah. Well, he talked about how...
Forever for him to get called up.
One of his pitches, his curveball, I think, abandoned him for a couple of innings yesterday, so he turned to his changeup. And I do like that he can throw 3 pitches. I really like what we've seen from Taillon, and other than yesterday, the strikeouts have been pretty solid over that last 6 start stretch. So that's cool. Mm-hmm. The Astros. Oh, no, wait. Before we get to the Astros, let's project the most drop list. These are some players that I think are going to be on the most drop list or should be on the most drop list. I'm going to start with one. You're probably going to say no, and I understand why. I don't think I'd have the guts to drop him, but we might be getting to that point. Justin Upton is 94% owned, and he got pretty hot after the All-Star break, really all of July. He had a .278 batting average, .522 slugging, good stuff. But Upton has not been able to sustain the hot streaks, and he is terrible again with a .176 average and no extra base hits and 1 steal in August. Should Justin Upton be on the most drop list?
I am actually with you on this, Adam, with caveat, of course. Head-to-head points leagues, which are typically 3 outfielder leagues, so, I mean, there's less outfielders that need to be owned in general. I don't see how he's one of the ones, one of the top 40, 45 right now. Because, I mean, you look at the week-by-week breakdown in points leagues with all those strikeouts. I mean, he's barely cracking 10 most weeks. Mm-hmm. And that's just not good enough. And it's been going on for all season. Yeah, I'm with you. I think the 94% ownership should be more like 75.
You're still just worried that if you cut him loose, you're going to miss that epic hot streak. Do you guys feel like that could still be coming for Justin Upton?
I really do. Yeah, no, I couldn't drop Upton. He's just kind of in that class of, and I went to look at the month by month breakdown just to kind of validate my own memory on how Upton's season has gone. And maybe if there was just, you know, truly nothing there, I could see it at this stage, but he's, I just think with his longer term track record that Upton's, you know, earned a lot of, benefit of the doubt. And he had a 198 ISO in June, a 244 in July. So that's basically 2 months heading into August where he had good power. So, you know, I'm going to write off August so far as a small sample artifact and bench him, but definitely not drop him.
Well, I mean, keep in mind, I said he still should be 75% owned. So I'm not like there are a lot of power hitters out there who don't do anything else. And if that's what we're hoping for Upton, I'm just not sure it's enough in those shallower points leagues.
Well, how about Jason Hayward? He's 78% owned. Are you ready to completely cut bait? Should Jason Hayward be on the most drop list?
I mean, I'm not disagreeing with the current ownership rate. And then, now here's a case of somebody who really, I think, came into the season for me, you know, ranked a little below Upton, but not far. But he has not done anything to keep my trust. So I think it could go. I don't think he should be, you know, dropped all over the place, but I do think there are some, you know, maybe, like Scott's the three outfielder leagues, you know, where he's probably still owned where Hayward could be dropped.
Boy, it's even bad. Adam Duvall is 95% owned. He's 2 for his last 24. He batted 234 in July. Adam Duvall, most drop list?
I feel like Adam Duvall is kind of what Justin Upton's aspiring to be now. And I am not particularly motivated to own Duvall in a points league. I think 95 is too high. I mean, roto leagues with the five outfielder spots and obviously home runs are a big part of the equation there. You kind of have to hold on to him, but three outfielder points leagues, I don't think so.
All right. Jurickson Profar, 49% owned. You know, I'm kind of disappointed here. First of all, he just hasn't really been that special in anything. He's not hitting for power. He doesn't steal. And he's not leading off anymore. So I didn't want to cut bait with Profar. I think I'm at the point where I'm going to. What about you guys?
I have it deeper leagues already, but again, that's kind of reflected in that ownership rate. I think it could, I don't know that he should necessarily be dropped to the point where he's, you know, one of the most dropped players, but yeah, I could see that going lower, because everything you mentioned. Plus, it just seems like in any given week, he could maybe only see one or two starts.
Well, yeah, I'm concerned about Profar. I think I'd rather own him than the next guy on my projected most drop list. Jung Ho Kang, 59% owned. He's been sitting a lot lately for David Freese. How owned do you think he should be, Jung Ho Kang?
I mean, 59 is pretty low. That's probably about as low as I'm willing to go. But I have dropped him in several leagues where I'd been holding on to him all season because it's not just about playing time anymore. I'm not sure he deserves the playing time with the way he's performed for all but that first month back. So, yeah, I'm pretty much over him.
All right, Jung Ho Kang. This guy is unbelievably overowned, this next guy. When you've got, I mean, like even a Sandy Leon available in some leagues, or a Gary Sanchez.
Don't know.
Oh, Matt Wieters.
I don't
know, Adam. Dude, Matt Wieters, in his last 31 games, he's slugging about 180. Slugging. He's one of the worst hitters in baseball for over a month. How could you possibly with Matt Wieters?
So what is his ownership rate?
72%. And he hasn't been good in so long.
I know, but it's relative to catcher. I mean,
I would drop him in a one catcher league. I'm not sure that if everybody did that would get that ownership rate that much lower.
I would think it would, but I'm trying to see where he ranks. 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12. Okay, so he's like 16th now in points leagues. For Gary Sanchez, fine. I mean, that's the upside play right now. He's getting tons of playing time. You know, part of the reason the Yankees are forcing A-Rod out is to make sure Sanchez has a spot in the lineup. So yeah, I would be willing to make that swap, but Sandy Leon, I mean.
Well, I'll give you some numbers on Leon. He's, since, oh gosh, now I have to find the numbers. He's like a top 13 in points and number 7 in Roto in the last 2 months or so, Sandy Leon. And if you look at his weekly points breakdown, he's basically scoring like 10 per week, 12 per week. It's not a lot, but
yeah,
but still, it's good enough at catcher. Oh, here we go.
Okay. If he keeps hitting 380, but he's not going to.
Yeah, but I mean, Wieters hitting like 150.
I hear you, but I mean, at least with Wieters, there's some track record there. And there have been, you know, a month ago, he was looking pretty good. So I would take, there are some catchers I would take over Wieters that probably are less owned than him. Cameron Rupp, I would imagine he's less owned than Wieters, right? He's having a really good year.
I'd take Zunino right now.
Zunino, yeah.
Yeah,
I think
said
that's
him. The only one you disagreed on was Leon. That's fine. I understand.
Tommy Joseph. Tommy Joseph's only 60% owned. That does seem like it needs to change. So, okay, we're meeting halfway here. You kind of talked me into it.
Look,
didn't like the Leon example.
I picked up Yasmani Grandal yesterday in our podcast league, and I don't know how owned he is. I think it's probably around 80%, but if you could do that swap, I mean, that's a no-brainer, right?
We absolutely.
Yeah.
Two others here. I suggest Tyler Naquin will be on the most drop list. He's 62% owned and struggling in his last 11 games. Badly.
I can agree with that. I mean, he had two solid months of out of this world production that seemed to come out of nowhere. So it wouldn't be a huge surprise if he, dropped off a la Robbie Grossman.
And how about Danny Valencia, 60% owned? And entering yesterday in August, he was batting 172 with one walk and 9 strikeouts. He had a really bad April. He did not homer in April. And then Valencia hit 8 home runs in May with a 1078 OPS. But he's been pretty cold since the start of July. Anyway, Valencia, 60% owned. You could make the case he's under-owned, that he's going to turn it around because he's a good hitter. But what do you guys think?
You could make the case he's under-owned because he's an everyday player again. And remember when Ryan Healy got called up, it looked like those days were over. But he's kind of taken Josh Reddick's spot in right field. But he's not doing anything with it. That's right. The problem. Like, I don't know. I've been in limbo with Valencia all year because for a while the overall numbers look great, but there was inconsistent playing time, and now it's like the reverse. I just feel like it would probably come. I know this is a boring answer because we give it all the time, but it would probably become like a 5 outfielder versus 3 outfielder thing for me. Like 5 outfielder leagues, it's so hard to find that fifth guy to fill out your lineup that Valencia seems like a more promising candidate than anything that would be on waivers. But in 3 outfielder league, who cares?
Okay, well, that's a good way to frame it. We know how you value him. I was going to talk about the Astros guys, Springer, Altuve, and Correa. I will say this about Correa. Since my birthday, I did a few since my birthdays in this one, like Sandy Leon since my birthday. I think Charlie.
Why?
Blackman. I just think it's funny. So I believe it started with Irvin Santana. I think Irvin Santana turned his season around on June 19th, my birthday. So there was one other guy.
You give me grief for
what's your birthday?
For pointing out on the podcast, on my birthday podcast, that it was my birthday? Did you just sneak that in there?
Yeah, yes, I did. But this has nothing to do with my birthday. This has to do
This has everything to do with your birthday.
Well, but
what
it's fantasy related.
And it's not celebrating even your
birthday. It's not celebrating me. It's fantasy related.
Okay.
Anyway, there was one other guy, and then I just started doing it as a joke. So since my birthday, Carlos Correa is the number 5 hitter in points leagues, number 11 hitter in Roto leagues. He's batting .298 with a .390 on base and a .567 OPS. So that is, we're coming up on 2 months. I said 567 OPS. I meant slugging. We're coming up on 2 months. Correa has been one of the best hitters in baseball. I just want to throw that out there. Anything to say?
No, I mean, it definitely will, I think, boost his value going to next year. Still a lot of time left to play, but this is what I thought we would have seen, from the get go with Correa, who I almost just called Cabrera. And yeah, you mentioned, coming up on 2 months now. So I just want to say I am sorry that I will not be here next Friday for the big 2 month birthday extravaganza that you'll be having.
Yeah.
On
don't
the podcast.
Believe me, that occurred to me. You don't have to rub salt in the wound, Al.
Yeah, sorry.
So here's the most added list. Joe Musgrove is number one at 66%. Underowned, overowned, or is the par edge just right on Joe Musgrove, 66%?
I think still a little underowned, and some of that has to do with the fact that he's got a nice matchup in week 20. And gosh darn, I just can't even remember which it was. It's the Orioles, and I'm considering them a good matchup now.
Okay. Yeah. Brad Miller, number two at 69%. Tyler Anderson, 57%. Would you rather own Musgrove or Anderson?
Musgrove. Ooh. Yeah, I would too, but I like them both.
Got some closers on the list. Travis Jankowski is 35% owned.
Well, that is right? That's way too low. He needs to be owned in every Roto League. He's an elite base stealer with a high on base percentage and playing every day. Everybody needs steals in that format.
Okay. Looks like the Padres have potentially tough matchups next week. They get Logan Verrett, DeGrom, Mats, Smiley, Snell, and Archer.
I'm not even going to worry about that in a Roto League. It's just,
yeah,
if you need to make up ground in steals, this is your golden opportunity to do it.
Tom Kohler, 45% owned. Luke Weaver, 21% owned. Who would you rather have?
Luke Weaver. Who was the other?
Tom Kohler.
Kohler. I'd rather have Kohler.
I'm going to gamble on the upside of Weaver because I'm just not convinced there's enough of that for Kohler.
Oh, Luke Weaver. Right? Right? Come on, people.
Yeah. Sure.
Dylan Bundy, Tyler Thornburg, Pedro Alvarez. We still feeling him? 43% own?
High hand play.
Yeah, I mean, this week wasn't going to go well for him. They haven't even gone to San Francisco yet where he's not going to play.
Right.
So definitely play matchups there.
He's certainly cooled off. He has three hits in his last like 17 at-bats. But that's what I said about Mark Trumbo when he hit a grand slam yesterday.
Well, yeah, so much for I didn't realize it was that bad. I thought he was still a hot hand play. Maybe not so much.
17 at-bats.
Yeah. Okay, I think I'm done with that because I want to read the Al mails. And
yeah, it's more important.
And the
baseball.
Poem.
Who cares?
You can talk about baseball next week.
The poem from Nando DeFino.
Oh,
I told him to.
Yes, indeed.
I told him to write a poem for Al, and he wrote such a strange, borderline offensive poem, and I can only read about 60% of it. So.
This just brings back such great memories.
Yeah. So I believe
things that Nando writes that you can't say on the air.
Exactly. I believe there will be a reading in the office, for you, Al, of the uncensored Nando poem.
Oh boy.
Oh, you're spoiling some of the last day surprise fun.
Yeah. Oh, I apologize, but
I didn't know there was actually last day surprise fun.
You're gonna hear this poem. Okay. So here's the edited version. And I think a big theme is that Al Melchior is an animal lover. Okay. Now, this is written by Nando, but it's his perspective of me, I guess. So pretend I wrote it and I'm reading it.
Okay.
There once was a man named Big Al. His meals, often frozen, low-cal. He's known for his data and once lived in Grenada. Scott White's dog is his number one pal. In 3 years, he's changed glasses thrice, and he warned us of bad David Price. Miss him we shall. He's our good friend, Big Al. In his fantasy veins run cold ice. Adam Azer will quite soon be wed. At his wedding, the guests will be fed. But Al, don't get excited. You aren't invited. Kenny Rotola will be there instead. Now I have to skip around.
I think you probably didn't write that part.
I did not write that part. Nando wrote all of this here. So where can I even go? Okay. I don't want to sound like I'm whining, but I question Al's move out west timing. Just a year after me, my move to NYC. What's next? Marry way up? Social climbing? Thank you, Dondo. Au revoir and goodbye, my good mate. We'll meet again on a near date. In a vacuum and slappy, both hope that you're happy. Now go right on today's pitching slate. And then expletive, expletive, something I can't read. Okay. Wow. That was tough to get through. It was very funny though. So thank you, Nando.
Well, thank you, Nando, Adam. That was, awesome delivery and awesome editing, I'm sure.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to enjoy the unedited version. Now, emails from the rest of you. This is from Steven from the farthest east in North America. I don't know where that is.
Newfoundland.
Okay. Dear Tim, MJ, and Bo.
This would be,
famous. Oh, Tebow. Yeah. So, yeah, baseball.
Ah, Tebow.
Other sports.
Guy's known for one sport. He tried baseball.
First, I just want to wish Al all the best in his Montana adventures. I've now realized that this show is the podcast version of Game of Thrones. First Nando, now Al, we can't get attached to anyone. To the point, though, what high-end, fringy starting pitchers would you add to your team for the rest of the season? Conley, Anderson, Skaggs, or Manaea?
High-end, fringy pitcher.
But, you know, at first it sounded like an oxymoron, but it fits. It's the high end of the fringe. Of that group, I like Tyler Anderson the best, but the other three are just, do I need to rank them? Because they're all right there in the same cluster.
I'll go with the other Tyler Skaggs, and Manaea would be my second choice.
Adam's going to Tyler Skaggs.
I'm going to Tyler Skaggs. Joe from Rockville Center, New York. Hey, Leiter, K-Line, and Oliver. Those are Al's. From the moment I discovered your podcast years back, I was hooked. Podcasts were new to me, and I was looking for one about baseball I could really get into. The CBS Fantasy Baseball Podcast was it. It became less hokey than many of the others out there, and the people on it were way more relatable. It became part of my daily routine. He goes on to... I was going to read all of this, but, you know, let's see. Thanks for all the chats, Al. You brought a sensible, level-headed approach to fantasy talk while peppering it with references that were just a tad too old for me. You were the guy everybody agreed they liked. Not only did your advice keep me informed, but it helped lead me to a pretty solid amount of fantasy success. I'm sure no matter what your next move is, you'll absolutely crush it, even though you're moving to Montana, the Sofia Coppola of states, because Sofia's movies are extremely beautiful, but also can be pretty boring. Thanks for everything, Al. It was a true pleasure. I like that. True pleasure getting to listen to you over the past few years. Good luck.
Well, thank you, Joe. I will say I'm not counting on being aboard in Montana. Lot to do outdoors. Well, yeah. Then there's the 6 months of the year where it's going to be freezing cold. But I'll figure that out then.
You're not going outdoors.
Matt in New Jersey. Goodbye, Al. What local sports teams are you planning on getting into out there? Also, do you think it's worth dropping Josh Tomlin? And does Ross Stripling look like a nice streaming option tonight?
Oh, that's true. You're not gonna. Are you gonna be a Marlins fan still? Like you were born a Marlins fan.
Yeah, it's not. No, it's not like that. I already talked about rooting for the Phillies when I was a kid. That's a tough one. So I'm gonna say yes. Drop Tomlin and Stripling. I'm thinking there's probably better streaming options than him.
Pittsburgh tonight?
Yeah, well, local sports teams. The local baseball market there is the Mariners. And I don't know, it's just I've lived in Florida way longer, almost three times longer than I've lived anyplace else. So I think my Marlins fandom, strangely enough, is here to stay.
Cool.
I'm not sure about the other sports, maybe the Utah Jazz. I don't know. We'll have to see.
You're allowed to keep a sports team when you move.
Yeah, no,
Al doesn't have a history of doing that, though.
That's the thing. So it's a totally fair question.
And Stripling has we said the Pirates tonight, so probably do better. Here's Chris. Gray the trade. Give up Corey Seager and Roberto Ozuna. Get David Ortiz and Clayton Kershaw. Seager is his utility, so he can put Ortiz there. So he thinks maybe upgrading from Seager to Ortiz, but he's worried about the slump. Also, he can easily replace Ozuna with Giles or Diaz.
Well, I think he just rationalized it pretty well there then. I mean, I could see a scenario where this would be a very bad trade. But if Seager's eligibility isn't relevant and closers are replaceable in your league, then yeah, gamble on Kershaw coming back. And, I do think Ortiz will probably be better than Seager rest of way, if only slightly.
Matt from Boston. I just wanted to say that I listen to a lot of sports podcasts. There's no better team than the three of you. Alan Scott, you are truly the best fantasy baseball duo out there. I look forward to every time you guys are on at once. Hope you can make guest appearances, Al. Long live the champion of the deep leagues. P.S. Al, you have a great stand-up career ahead of you after watching that video of you in the CBS cafeteria. Which bet did you lose with Nando that you had to get hit in the head with a volleyball?
Well, that's a great story that probably don't have you know, time for it to be really go into deeply. But by the way, if I'm going to have a stand-up career, then Nando and Dave Richard have to write the material because they wrote the material that day. But the bet I lost with Nando is what we call the Chenoff, that there was a week where Weigh-In and Bruce were supposed to pitch against each other. And so we made a bet. I took Bruce. Nando took Weigh-In. It turns out then that the rotation shifted, so they pitched on consecutive days rather than against each other. So Bruce pitched first and actually had an unusually good outing, and then Weigh-In just barely beat him, I think by like one fantasy point. So that is the story behind the volleyball incident.
Wait, where is this guy seeing this video?
Matt Brodsky, our good colleague Matt Brodsky, put him on Twitter yesterday.
Oh, did you retweet? Did somebody retweet them?
I did not. Probably should have. So I think others may have retweeted.
Okay. Yeah.
Got a few more.
I think Heath did.
They're out there on Twitter.
Al Melchior emails.
Al's highlights.
This is Scott in Rochester. My Al Melchior memory takes us back to May or June of last year. Adam asked the panel, who is leading the American League in RBI? I think he was still saying RBIs then. After a few wrong guesses, Adam told us that it was Kendrys Morales. Then he proceeded to say, Al, you're not that big on Morales this season. You've got him ranked. Let's see here. Oh, Al, 42nd best first baseman? Al just said, yeah, I may have to make an adjustment there. For some reason, I found that hilarious. I'll never forget it. Thanks for the memories, info, and entertainment. Al, good luck and God bless. And now rank these pitchers for a dynasty league. Dylan Bundy, John Gray, Michael Fulmer, and Jameson Taillon.
Let's see. How about Bundy, Taillon, Gray, and Fulmer?
P.S. Al doesn't sound like Heath. Al sounds like a perfect mixture of Keith Hernandez and Ron Darling. Check out a Mets TV broadcast. I disagree.
Well, that's weird.
Yeah, I don't hear it.
I can kind of hear the Ron Darling a little bit.
Best broadcast team in the business. David from Fort Lauderdale. And yeah, we're going long today with the Al emails. I have Dylan Bundy and Joe Musgrove. Should I pick up Eduardo Rodriguez? Well, why am I reading that? All I want to read is Al emails, but fine, we'll do this anyway. Dylan Bundy and Joe Musgrove going against each other. Should I pick up a two-star Eduardo Rodriguez? And what's my best play with those guys for a fifth spot in his rotation?
I mean, I could, if you really felt like you were the underdog and you needed a win, I could see dropping Musgrove and starting Rodriguez instead. But 9 times out of 10, I think I'll just stand pat.
Okay. So this is from Chris Brantuver from a city east of Cleveland, the city of champions. And he says, dear Bukirki, Cajal, and Batros.
Those are Al's.
Those are Al's. I wanted to say thank you to Al for all of his great fantasy advice. I love it. I can contribute 2 of my points league's championships to Al, his 2-star pitcher's advice, and how he got me to change my draft day strategy, focusing on hitters and points leagues and streaming 2-star pitchers throughout the year. So thank you, Chris, for the email. And then finally, this is from Tony D'Amico from Crestwood, Illinois, a longtime listener.
Is it D'Amico or D'Amico?
Sure. I vote for D'Amico.
D'Amico Ryans. Hey, Al, and Al, I've been listening to FBT for 7 or 8 years now. This is truly a sad day for the podcast listeners. For me specifically, Al was one of the reasons I still listened to the FBT podcast.
We're going to lose this listener here.
Method of analysis aligns perfectly with mine since I put on that they play in the Dynasty and Keeper League that are usually deep. I'm sorry if this sounds harsh, but the rest of you are slaves to your 10 and 12 team league analysis.
Woo, that is harsh.
That is harsh.
And I think unwarranted.
Man, stand up for us, Al.
I think I just did.
Yeah. So good luck for your future, Al. I'm glad to hear that you will still answer tweets since you are one of my go-to analysts. Don't get lost in the Montana wilderness. At least I can still treat the show about movies. What? I don't know what this means. And if I'm lucky, Heath will take up the mantle of deep league expert. All right, we'll put it on Heath. Tony, you're our longtime listener. I know you're going to stick with us, but we are all going to miss Al. So Al, take it away.
Well, this is a moment I've not really looked forward to, saying goodbye to you guys and to everybody. But I think it's appropriate finishing up with you, Scott, and Adam. Because, as I mentioned the other day, you know, Scott, I've worked more closely with you than anybody in my work life. 6 years of day in, day out. Adam, we've been podcasting since, I think, literally my first day on the job, first or second. And I remember that first podcast, and you were very, very patient because that first podcast, I think I said about three words. And you eased me into things, and, I know we don't have the time, you know, for me to go over everything, but it's just, you guys have been fantastic to work with. Miss you both tremendously. You've been an everyday part of my life. And, this is just a fantastic group to be a part of. It's a real privilege. I've learned so much from everybody, and not just, Scott and Adam, but, Chris Towers, Keith Cummings, our football guys, Dave and Jamie, be remiss not to mention Nando. I'm sure I'm missing people, unfortunately, but, just a fantastic group here, and I will miss you guys tremendously.
And the listeners, you want to say goodbye to the listeners?
Yeah. The tweets, and emails, that I've been getting the last couple of days, just been tremendous, means a ton to me. I will still be tweeting. I'll be showing up somewhere within the next couple of weeks, and I'll let everybody know on Twitter what that is. But whether or not you come along for the ride, just thanks for listening, thanks for reading, watching our videos, and I've got, I think, probably way more from all of you than you've probably gotten from me over the years.
Keep it short, and then I'll let Scott finish. But we've really had a great group of fantasy analysts at CBS since I've been on the job starting in 2009, and I've liked almost all of them, and just about. And Al's the nicest. Al wins that prize. The nicest guy, one of the nicest guys I've ever met, probably the nicest guy I've ever worked with, and that's saying something because we really have a great group of guys. And also probably the easiest person to work with, just made my job so simple, and I appreciate that so much. I don't really feel like getting choked up. Scott, what do you have to say about Al?
Yeah, no, I mean, you talked about how nice he is, and like it's authentic, you know. There's
right.
It's easy to put on an act when you're talking for just an hour a day, and then, you know, behind the scenes, it might be different, but the authenticity, is definitely there with Al. And I remember, he talks about how we've worked. I'm the closest person he's worked with over in his whole working career. These last 6 years, it's kind of been like a work marriage. So you'd think there'd be a lot of friction during that time. And I'm not always the easiest person to get along with. I can be pretty stubborn about things. I remember before we had individual rankings, we had to like come up with like a group ranking. And so that was always a bit of a struggle to land in the same spot. And like that's the only time during those 6 years I remember Al getting upset at me about something because I kept badgering him about I didn't like where he had some guy, and he kind of yelled, like, and there was like just this pall over the whole group. Nobody ever heard Al react that
I remember the incident. I wish I could remember the player involved, because obviously it was somebody I was really invested in, I guess.
So there was like, so it happened, and everybody fell silent for like 3 or 4 seconds, and then Al immediately goes, "Okay, I'm sorry for snapping." he couldn't even own that moment of being less than nice, when I probably deserved it, by the way. So that's one of my favorite Al stories. The one time he got mad, and everybody remembers it every time I bring it up because it was so unusual.
Well, yeah, look, it was great working with you, Al. Thank you so much, and we wish you the best. It's a sad day. It's also a happy day because we're excited for the next stage of your life, and keep in touch, buddy.
Will do. Absolutely.
So, I guess for the last time, for Scott White and Al Melchior, I'm Adam Azer. This is Fantasy Baseball Today. Have a great weekend, everybody. We'll talk to you on Monday. Machado or Bob.